Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Well, the blue skies of Seattle are definitely out there just busting their blue buttons. And we are loving every minute of it here in Washington. And I am sure you're going to be enjoying my guest this evening. Gratitude Tiger is the title of Joel Zuckerman's book. And it's got a very special story behind it because this man has done something that not many people would even give a consideration to. And what might that be? He has written 300 letters of gratitude. Now, his background, for those of you that enjoy the game of golf, well, he was deeply involved with it for many, many years, and we'll find out more. Now, he has been acknowledged for his writing about a sport that people around the world love, but there was a shift that occurred, and that occurred a few years ago, and that is where Gratitude Tiger has come about. What is it? How is it going to benefit your life? But more than that, how is it going to be putting you in touch with a part of yourself that maybe you need to give a little bit more time to? Joel Zuckerman, I want to welcome you to the show.
Donna, thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you, and I look forward to our conversation.
I love the cover on your book. I love the tiger. I love the color orange that was used. And the dynamics, whoever did this, just did a fabulous job because it gives an image of the power of information that you share inside the book itself. And I think that it is something that is crazy and wacky as our world is today. And the frustrations that people go through, well, the attitude of gratitude can make a great deal of difference. Joel, I mentioned that you had quite a background in golf, and before we started with the program, you shared some information with you. What was it that created the shift that you said you really want to let people know the value of gratitude? What was it that you did that made you say, I'm going to sit down and write this book?
That's a great question. It's a question that people often ask me. And before I dive in, everyone mentions, not everyone, a lot of people are interested in my background as a golf writer. So I should say right off the bat, Donna, that Gratitude Tiger has nothing to do with Tiger Woods. It's a question I've often received. Tiger is an acronym. It means tapping into gratitude engenders rewards. So it's one of the first questions I get when I speak and in a Q&A afterwards, but Tiger, in my case, is not Tiger Woods, although I did chronicle his long career, both his ups and his downs. And I wanted to make that abundantly clear right at the get-go, but in answer to your question, in 2013, I was a very busy writer, books, magazine articles, websites, speaking about golf at different resorts, etc. And I didn't read the book. I skimmed a famous self-help book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all small stuff. You're familiar with it. And
yes,
sure
I am. Yes, I am.
Many of your readers, many of your listeners are familiar with the book. It's a huge bestseller. So one of the chapters in the book was titled Write a Heartfelt Letter. The book, as you might recall, it's just life tips and tricks and hacks how to live a better life. So the chapter said, write a heartfelt letter. And I thought to myself, well, I'm a writer. I'm a person who writes books and stories and features and travelogues. I can write a heartfelt letter. So I thought about who I wanted to write to, and I decided I would write to a mentor, a friend, a business associate of mine in the golf industry. I texted him for his address. I sat down at the computer and used my word processor to write him what I immediately started calling a letter of gratitude. when I was writing the letter, Donna, it never occurred to me I would write a second letter. It was just an intellectual exercise, I think, on a lazy Sunday afternoon. But when I put the letter in the mailbox, envelope, stamp, mailbox, I was overcome with a feeling of warmth and connection that really surprised me. So a week or 10 days later, I wrote another letter. And then I wrote another and another. And after a year, I'd written 25. I remember after I'd written the 50th letter, a couple of years in, I threw a pinch of confetti into the envelope. And then it was 100. And then after about 5 or 6 years, I'd written 150 letters of gratitude. And I decided to write a book called Grateful. And I wrote 30 more letters. It took another couple of years. And I published a book right in the pandemic, 2020, called Grateful, which was a compilation of my first 180 letters. And I gave the book away to people in my life who were important to me, people I had written letters to. And I thought I was done with the hobby, but then I kept writing and people kept inspiring me and befriending me and doing me a kindness. So now, as you said at the intro, I'm getting close to 300 letters written and sent over the last 12 years. November will be 12 years. And about 2 years ago, I said I should write a book for the public to learn about the joys of letter writing and how to do it and why to do it. And the book, Gratitude Tiger, bolsters my speaking. My main gig is speaking about proactive gratitude. And some of my advisors said, you should write a book that will serve as a calling card for meeting planners, HR people, executives who might want you to come speak to their corporation. So that's how I wrote. That's why I wrote Gratitude Tiger.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's often spouted very, very quickly, be grateful. And it is something that I can tell you, being a broadcaster and having been doing my shows for, you know, well over 25 years and interacting with people as I do frequently, there is so much we have that we can be grateful for. And so often we focus on that which we sense or feel like we might be lacking. And I really appreciated your foreword by Picabo Street, who is an Olympic champion, and her story.
Peekaboo.
Her
name is Peekaboo.
Oh, Peekaboo. Oh, good. Yes. Okay, Peekaboo. Thank you. I appreciate that. This is something, when I learn of what people have gone through, when we read stories about people, and that's why books are so important. You can hear stories from other people, but many times when you sit down with a book and you read it, and you really think about what someone's gone through, and then you look around at your life, you can say to yourself, there is so much I can be grateful for. And I really appreciated so much of what you have in your book, because it is not a how-to book, but it is giving a perception about showing appreciation, whether you're a professional, whether you're running a company. Saying thank you can go a long way. Define, and you have your very first chapter about defining a letter of gratitude. And I loved it when you started off saying, it isn't an email, it isn't a text, it isn't an emoji, it isn't a GIF, it isn't a TikTok, it isn't a Snapchat, it isn't DM, and it isn't just a mere thank you note. Now, I can tell you there's a lot of people that never say even thank you. This first chapter is very important.
So true, so true. And Donna, you hit on something a moment ago, which is really one of the key elements of Gratitude Tiger. You said there's so much to be grateful for. And if people take a moment and they look around and take stock of their lives, there's so much to be thankful for. That is called reactive gratitude. The best example I can give you is when you're worried about a health concern and you get a benign diagnosis. Oh my God, you're so grateful. Narrowly avoid an accident on the interstate. You swerve around and there's a horrific collision and you escape unscathed. Oh my God, you're so grateful. Your kid or your grandkid gets into the college of their choice. You're so grateful. That's reactive gratitude. The book Gratitude Tiger talks about proactive gratitude. You must express gratitude to gain the benefits. Everyone feels gratitude. My favorite expression, Donna, in this regard is from the great American writer Gertrude Stein. She said, "Silent gratitude isn't much use to anyone." In other words, it's great to feel grateful, count your blessings, but you must express your gratitude to others to gain the benefits. And in my opinion, and the reason I wrote this book and the reason I speak to corporate events and at wellness retreats is by writing letters of gratitude to people who have helped you. The number one reason to write a letter to someone and the reason I've done it more than 280 times is because it makes me feel good. The person receiving the letter theoretically feels joyful, delighted, surprised, complimented, but I didn't write the letter for them. I wrote the letter for myself. That's the number one pillar. My keynote is called The Seven Pillars of Expressive Gratitude, and pillar number one is writing letters of gratitude makes you feel good. I don't think you have to guess too many times to guess what pillar number two is. It makes the recipient feel good, but that's pillar number two. Pillar number one is it makes you feel good, and it's the message in Gratitude Tiger, the book, and when I speak to audiences.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can hear you. Yes, for a moment you were gone.
I'm sorry. I hope I gave you quite a soliloquy. I hope you didn't miss too much of it.
No, but we got what you were saying, and then you were gone. But you are so right. It does make us feel good. But I delighted in your story about how, when you were growing up, and I can remember getting the same lecture, to say thank you to people that gave you gifts. And you talked about your bar mitzvah and all the thank you notes that you had to send out. You don't even remember who gave you what, and I can totally get that.
It's been a long time.
Yes, and you know, it's really fascinating how to really write a letter. And when you listen to people that have found letters in a trunk in an attic somewhere or in a box that somebody's kept and say, gee, I want you to know this is part of your family legacy or whatever might be behind those letters. Now we have emails and it's not the same. It isn't the same. And
it's not
people,
the same, exactly. That's such a great point.
Yeah, it's not the same. And when you sit down to write a letter, let's hope you've got a handwriting that's legible. But it really is a challenge for people. They've gotten so, let's say culturally, we have gotten away from understanding that personal touch. And I liked how you emphasized that in showing gratitude. Now, you can't do that in all situations necessarily, but I do think it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
It makes a huge difference, and you unpacked a couple of points. Let me touch on them. First of all, I urge everyone to write letters, handwritten letters. Mine are all on the word processor, which is a wonderful thing. It spares people my handwriting, but more importantly, it has allowed me to develop this cottage industry. I know who I have written to, what I've said, and when. You'll notice in my book, one of the longer chapters is 12 sample letters. So you can see who I wrote to, one sample from every year from 2013 through 2024. And I give examples of a condolence gratitude letter, a gratitude letter to my one-year-old granddaughter, to a friend who reappeared after 35 years of no contact. There's a transactional type gratitude letter. So if I hadn't used the word processor, and by the way, Donna, less than 2 hours ago, I wrote a letter of gratitude on my computer, so I continue to do so. But yes, most people will hand write the letter, assuming they know how to write in cursive. I make speeches to groups of millennials and Gen Z age people who never learned how to write in cursive. They know how to print. So whatever it might be, but let me make a very important point. You mentioned thank you notes. A letter of gratitude is different than a thank you note, and I'll explain it very briefly. A thank you note is sometimes, depending on the society you're in, expected. If someone has you over for dinner, perhaps they'll expect a thank you note or a thank you text or a thank you email. If someone invites you to a party, gives you a gift. In certain segments of society, now sadly disappearing, a thank you note might be, I don't know if expected is the right word, but it wouldn't be surprising for someone to write a thank you note. I've written hundreds of thank you notes for dinner parties, etc. A letter of gratitude differs because it's not expected. It's a surprise. You're reaching out to someone to tell them, I'm grateful to know you. I'm grateful you have been part of my life. And it's generally a little bit more broadly based. It's a little bit more expansive than a thank you note. A thank you note, typically, thank you for having us to dinner. The food was delicious. Thank you for introducing me to so-and-so. He's a wonderful contact. You're writing a thank you note for a specific reason, generally. But a letter of gratitude is showing general expansive gratitude to the person. So the surprise factor and the general sense of gratitude make it different than a thank you note.
That is very true. You also encourage people to keep a gratitude journal, and I appreciated the fact that you said write out what it was you really enjoyed. What was it that made you feel so grateful for seeing someone or for having a chance to share with them your thoughts and that type of thing? And just, it's your own journal. It's between you and God, and that's all. It doesn't make any difference if anybody ever sees it. It's just something that makes you feel very, very good and appreciative. But I enjoyed the gratitude jar. You need to share the gratitude jar.
Well, let me share something with you, Donna. I'm sure most of your readers have heard of a gratitude journal. And the gist of it is you write down thoughts of gratitude that happened, and you date the page, and then when you revisit a month later and you read that your daughter came home with a B+ on a math quiz and she had never gotten better than a C, you might have forgotten that. But when you reread your gratitude journal, it jars your memory. But personally, I don't do a gratitude journal and I don't do the gratitude jar. But what I do, and I encourage all of your listeners to consider, is something called count your blessings. Let me explain it briefly. When you get into bed, as you're settling in, you recall everything that happened that day from morning until night that made you grateful. Little things. For example, I'm glad I started off this morning with yogurt and fruit. I could have easily polished off the kids' pancakes. I'm glad I saw Bill at the hardware store. I'm glad when I pulled into the gas station, a pump opened up in front of me. I'm glad that Zoom conference was only 30 minutes. I had allotted an hour. And you go through your day piece by piece from morning till evening. And what this does is has a calming effect on your nervous system and will help you find sleep more easily. And when you get comfortable with this, when you get good at it, you can sometimes think of 20, even 30 things that happened that day. Now, you and I are talking in the evening. So when I go to bed in a couple of hours, this conversation will be at the tail end of things that I was grateful that happened today.
Yes. And something you bring out, which we've already mentioned in one way or another, and that is to be aware that you may not even get a response from anyone that receives a gratitude letter. And I think that that so often is true. That is very, very true. However,
you're a good reader. That is one of the major points in the book for sure.
Yes. And something happened, though, because there was a disappointment down deep. You go, gee, I wish I had heard back from this person. But that doesn't always happen. However, your wife told you something that really surprised you because you had written a letter, a gratitude letter, to a woman named Hillary. And when your wife told you what Hillary said, she never said anything to you. It was really quite meaningful to you. What did Hillary say?
Yeah, that's such a wonderful story. So I'll set up what you just mentioned before I give you the punchline. I've written 280 plus letters, and I've heard from probably 80 people. So more than 2 out of 3 people who receive letters do not acknowledge them. In fact, the chapter in the book that you're referring to is called Acknowledge, You Probably Won't Be Acknowledged. Okay? So you have to put the good out in the world. It's nice to be thanked. It's nice for people to let you know they got the letter, just so you know the post office did its job, if for no other reason, that you know that they received it. But most people, for a wide range of reasons, we don't have time to go into it, will not let you know they received it. But regarding my wife's friend Hillary, she received a letter from me early on, maybe 30, 40 letters in. Now I'm at 280. I probably wrote to her in 2014. I've seen her a dozen times since. She's never mentioned it. But she said to my wife, Joel's letter took my knees out from under me. So for whatever reason, Donna, she wasn't comfortable, because not everyone is like you or certainly like me, you know, able to share their feelings of love or gratitude or, in many cases, resentment and disappointment, whatever the case may be. Hillary is a person like that. She's kind of stoic. She's a strong, silent type. But when Elaine, my wife, told me that Hillary told her, your husband's letter took my knees out from under me, that was all the validation I needed.
Mm-hmm. That is very, very important. Now, you give suggestions about how to jumpstart, and that's one of the titles of your chapters, to jumpstart a letter of gratitude. And I think, especially with all the quagmire of fear that has been literally boiling to a point where I think we have to really understand that our attitudes, our behaviors can take and neutralize that cauldron of distortion. It can be neutralized big time, but we need to be able to be appreciative of where we are and not get caught up in the game of fear. You have a chapter on being grateful when the world is hateful. And perception of what goes on around us is huge in life. And I really think that's one of the many gifts that your book brings to someone who wants to pick it up and read it. And I would even suggest that they use a yellow highlighter. That's my favorite color to use in the books. And use it and really think about it. Underline whatever it is that they read. This book is a friend. You're very kind. This is a friend. So this is something with the hate that can neutralize that hate. It can keep us level.
Right. The chapter you're referring to is the longest chapter in the book. Most of the chapters in Gratitude Tiger are 6 pages long. I guess I kind of channeled that famous book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, that started this all for me 12 years ago. Because mm-hmm. most of the chapters in that book were literally 4 pages long. And most of my chapters, as you've seen, are 4 pages, 6 pages, maybe 8. But Grateful When the World is Hateful tells the story of an accident that happened to me in Peru in April of 2024, where out of lightning struck and I got hurt. and had to be evacuated from 15,000 feet, first by horseback, then by mountain stretcher, then by SUV, then three flights home to Salt Lake City. And it was a devastating blow. I left my wife and my friends back in Peru. I didn't want them to, certainly I didn't want to ask my wife to accompany me home. I wasn't dying, but I couldn't move my leg, which means I couldn't hike. We were hiking 5 days into Machu Picchu. So I used my gratitude as best I could to try and stave off the negative cauldron of emotions. I was home by myself for a week before surgery, and it was a difficult time for me. But then I realized I knew people in my life who would gladly trade their circumstances for mine, with my busted up leg, which healed up in about, 4 or 5 months. Friends who lost children, friends with debilitating diseases. In fact, one of the favorite people in that chapter, my summer camp friend from the mid-1960s, Pam Graboff, suffered with ALS for 6 years. And she passed away about a month ago, finally free from the scourge of ALS. But what I asked of these people in my orbit, those who have lost children, or Pam with her ALS, how do you find gratitude in your situation? And their answers were profound and revealing. And Pam in particular, God bless her, I'm glad, this sounds awful, I'm glad she's finally free, because it got to the point where she couldn't eat. Mm-hmm. She was being fed by a tube. She became immobile very quickly, within a year of the diagnosis, but she lasted for 5 additional years, which is extraordinary, because most ALS sufferers, as you might know, die within 2, 3 years, 4 years. So that chapter is very instructive, Donna, because I spoke to people about, you've had such terrible losses. You've been devastated by life. How do you find gratitude? And I think that chapter it's certainly the most poignant chapter in the book.
It is. And her story especially is quite significant because of what she really felt and why she was grateful for every day of her life. And this wasn't something that she had any control over. It absolutely was a complete loss of control of everything, basically, in her life.
She needed caregivers 24 hours a day, and that's one of the things she was grateful for. Mm-hmm. She loved her staff. She loved the friends. She loved raising money for the Georgia chapter of the ALS Foundation. The woman found peace in her situation. And Pam is incredible, but she's not the only one. The other stories in the book, I have a good friend here in Park City named Ron Jackenthal. Ron lost his son, Sam, to a ski accident 10 years ago in 2015. And Ron, through his grief, started a nonprofit called Live Like Sam. His son was a very forward, ebullient, happy kid, and Ron started a nonprofit to help at-risk youth. You know, the scourge of social media, mm-hmm. and being mm-hmm. online, and a lot of kids today feel lost and hurt and troubled. So Ron founded a charity which has such a wonderful name, Live Like Sam. In other words, try to be like his deceased son and find the spirit and the goodness in life. So these people, Ron is an example, and Pam, they found the gratitude despite the horrible hands they were dealt. And I try to tell those stories as best I can in that chapter of the book.
Yes, you do. And I think those are things that many times we need to be able to pay attention to. And I think that makes our life even richer. I delighted in your story in your book about your granddaughter, Leslie Meredith, and on her first birthday, which was in 2020, you wrote a letter, and I'm not going to read it because it is something that I would say anybody who gets the book, they need to read this letter. By the way, it's on page 82, 83, 84, and 85. It's a long letter. So it's it is something, you know. But this is something that when I was reading it, I thought at some point she's going to be able to open that letter and read what her grandpa wrote on her very first birthday. Yeah. And if by grace you are still alive when she has a chance to read that as a young woman, I think that that is going to mean so much to her. And I thought this is something that to write a letter of gratitude to anyone, and I would say even if someone has passed away, sometimes there are people that have been in our lives that we've never really, we've told them thank you. We have let them know maybe in different ways how much we've appreciated them. But maybe sometimes they come into your mind and you would just like to do something a little bit more extra. Well, write the letter. Write the letter.
Well, Donna, I have to tell you, you know, I have a very honed, I have a very smooth keynote presentation, which I'm so thrilled to deliver for audiences wherever they want me, wherever they hire me. And about 7 or 8 minutes into every presentation, I say, let's really get this going with a thought exercise. I want you in the audience to think of two people to whom you feel gratitude, one that's with you and one no longer with you. And in my experience, having done it many, many times, people have an immediate reflexive action. They immediately know who they are grateful to. And I'll ask the audience, and people tear up talking about their grandfather or their mother or their deceased spouse. And then I'll say to them, it's too late to reach out to the person no longer with you, so don't hesitate. Please write to the person that you thought of who's still with you while you can. One of my favorite quotes, and I use it when I speak, and it's in the book by Ralph Waldo Emerson. You can never do a kindness too soon because you never know how soon it will be too late.
That is very true. That's what some people would say is living in the moment, living in the thought, being present with where you are, and being grateful. Your book, Gratitude Tiger, I think is a powerhouse. It's beautifully done. Like I told you earlier, I love the cover on it. Creating Joy Through the Art of Impactful Letters, I think is just a wonderful way to describe it. And you say for Tiger, there's the acronym. T is for tapping, I is for into, G is for gratitude, E for engenders, and the last letter R is rewards. Now, you have a website, and people can go to that website, gratitudetiger.com. It has been such a pleasure, Joel Zuckerman, having you as a guest, and I just wish you continued success with this. I think that there's a lot of people that are going to just thoroughly enjoy your message when you have a chance to talk to them, and also when they have the opportunity to read your publication. Thank you again for being my guest.
It's my pleasure. I'm so happy to have the chance to talk to you, and people will enjoy the book and will be, their lives will be, if you write letters of gratitude, Donna, your life will be enhanced. There is no doubt.
That I totally agree with, and thank you. Wishing you the
best.
Take
care. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're saying goodbye to Joel Zuckerman, and we're going to come back in just a moment. I have other good things to share with you. And also, hey, you can give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 253-582-5597. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebo'sClassics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015. Lakewood, Washington, 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Here we are, the 1st of July. The 4th is just a few days away, and oh my word, it is crazy, crazy. There are millions of people around this country that are traveling, taking vacation time, getting away. The weather here in Washington, like I said, is just absolutely gorgeous. And it's a celebration that means a lot to us in the United States, to all Americans, because of what it represents. And this is something that I feel that is so very, very important for us to be able to appreciate and to respect, because it is very, very precious. And I'm very, very grateful for the celebration. Now, who's coming up on the Donna Sebo Show? Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about how you claim your dream life. And, of course, tomorrow is Wednesday, which is always a doubleheader. We're going to be talking with Gwen McPhail, My Place Among Them. And the story is just absolutely incredible. And it is about a Native American. And I will tell you, it is just a marvelous, marvelous program. And then we're going to be talking on Thursday about 52 weeks to connect to spirit and transform your life forever with Gene Walters. And of course, then Friday is the 4th of July, the beginning of a holiday weekend that people are just absolutely thrilled about, especially here in this state, because we never know during the month of July whether we're going to have storms or we're going to have sunshine. Well, this year we've got sunshine, and the weather is going to be just amazing, especially for all of the fireworks and the celebrations that are going on around the country. Well, they're happening here too. And any time to have a party, my husband used to say, any excuse to have a party is a good excuse. So by golly, that is what is occurring at this time. So on the 4th of July, there is going to be a program. It will be pre-recorded, but I have to tell you, I don't know if it's going to be a special 4th of July program or if it will be a repeat. We're still working on this. We don't know exactly what's going to be put on air on the 4th of July, but just know, as always, with any of the programs, with the holiday, I know everybody's going to be out celebrating. And that's fine, but you'll still get the story. You'll still be able to have access to programming that is done. And you can go into the archives 24/7. And then the latest 13 to 15 hours of programming is on my player on my network page. So you can do that. And the email newsletter went out. And I have to tell you that we have filled in most of what is perceived as the to-be-announced programs. Well, they have been filled in. So we are going to be encouraging you to go to the website, DelphiInternational.com, and also the network page, so that you can see the calendar of upcoming guests. And then on Facebook, my social media gal Deb is going to be posting information. But today we just got so many people responding that want to be a part of the show. So we're little by little getting everything confirmed time-wise. And that's a challenge, especially when you have a holiday period coming up. And we've had two big holiday periods this month, or last month of June, and now the 1st of July, of course, with the 4th. And all of this, people are busy, so it takes time. So anyway, just know, check on the network page. And of course, I will always be giving you information relative to who's coming up and what the topic is going to be. And then I want to encourage you to check out the Author's Showcase, because those people that have been in that Author's Showcase, they're there and they have contributed to the well-being of this program financially. Also, you have direct links with whether they've been on television with me and or the radio programming. Those links are available and they can be contacted directly. So you have all of that. And oh my goodness, it is just an incredible time of the year. There's so often things that we want to fix. Have you noticed that when the weather starts changing that your desire for certain foods increases? Maybe you having more salads than what you did before, especially if the weather's warm. Or let's get really down to bare bones. I was talking to someone in New York City, and they were cooking. They said they had had a heat wave that just was absolutely incredible. I guess it was like close to 100 degrees or more, and it was totally unexpected. They said, we just don't have that during this time of the year. Well, they did. Now it's cooling down a little bit, but they're in for a long, hot summer. Wasn't there a movie that had a title like that? Anyway, one of the foods that comes out are radishes. Now, I am not a big radish fan, but I really find it amazing to realize that that particular, I guess I want to call it a vegetable, and it is called a vegetable because of the roots that are associated with it. But do you know that the radish has been used? Their seeds are used for oil. You can eat the leaves. You can eat the seeds as well as the meat of the vegetable itself, which is wonderful. And among the Asian people, they will often pickle it. Even in Europe, they will pickle it and they will do all kinds of things with it. And I thought I would share a recipe with you, because when it comes to radishes, I have absolutely no imagination. So when I came across this information about radishes, I said, boy, you know what? I'm going to share this with you, because it really is amazing. Radishes have been eaten by cultures for literally thousands of years. And here in America, and I've never seen them, I know the red ones, but do you know radishes are white, pink, and purple? That's right. People would eat it as part of a sandwich, like raw onions. That was about as appealing to me as dirt. I don't think so. Raw onions and I don't get along at all. But radishes, people would butter a piece of bread, put the radishes on, and crunch and munch and just thoroughly enjoy it. Now, we might be aware of the daikon radish, which is very, very large. It can be as long as 3 feet and weigh up to 60 pounds. Well, these foods have been used by cultures, again, for thousands of years. I didn't know people put it in soup. I had no idea that it was put into kimchi. But of course, in the Asian culture, they have different types, as I've just mentioned, radishes. But people have also put them into salads and added pears and ginger. I mean, the creative adaptation for that one vegetable, boy, have I gotten an education. And this is something that I thought I would share with you. If you want to try something different, there's a radish, mango, and apple salad. Now, there's a dressing that you can make with it. You need a half a cup of sour cream, 2 teaspoons of creamed horseradish, 1 tablespoon of fresh dill chopped finely, a little bit of salt and pepper. And then for the salad, what you're going to do, you're going to use 10 to 12 radishes. And you want to, of course, wash them and remove the leaves and the ends. You need 1 apple. You peel it, core it, and thinly slice it. 2 celery ribs you thinly slice. 1 small ripe mango peeled and cut into small chunks. And the dressing, well, just mix it up. That's all you need to do. The radishes need to be sliced thinly. You put them in a bowl with apple and celery. Your mango, if you know how to cut that open lengthwise on either side of the pit and just make crisscross cuts through each section of the mango, you want to keep the skin intact, and you want to take each one of those pieces that you have and bend them back to separate the cubes and put it in the bowl and just pour the dressing over the vegetables and fruit. And you want to make sure that everything is covered with the dressing and just garnish it maybe with a piece of dill. But it is a very refreshing salad. And I think I was also surprised that a simple way to fix them, and this is done in France, and people of all ages like, and they've been doing this for generations. Remember I said buttered bread with sliced radishes? Well, that's what they do. And they add a little salt, because the radishes don't have any salt to speak of in the flavoring. And just put it on a piece of bread. Put your favorite bread, if you like, you know, the wonderful, wonderful breads that you can get at different stores, the artisan breads, etc. Then just put a little bit of butter on it, add a little bit of salt, put on those radishes. My gracious, you just learn something new every day, and that's exactly what I've done today. I wanted to share some thoughts with you because there are some stories that crossed my desk, and I said, all right, let me just share this. But one of these commentaries that crossed my desk, I thought I would mention because of our topic about gratitude. You know, there's so much that's going on, and when you talk with people, you'll find, and I find this even standing just in my local post office, there's these conversations that will occur about how this is negative or how that is negative. And before you know it, there's this heaviness that seems to fill the air. Well, there's a man by the name of Ernest Holmes, and he wrote one time, he said, "We must find new meanings to life if we hope to create new images, which, in their turn, will supply new reflections." You know, we've been told to judge not according to appearances, but to judge righteously. If we judge only according to what is now transpiring, our reflection of these images will merely perpetuate the old limitation. But if we judge rightly, that is, if we look to the omnipotence of good, we shall create new images of thought which will reflect greater abundance. Ernest Holmes wrote those words, and when I came across that this afternoon, I said, okay, I've got to share that, because that is true. What you focus on, what you give a lot of attention to, that is where the patternings go. And sometimes the most amazing things occur when we make a shift. When we make a shift and we recognize maybe we're going down that road of, gee, life is miserable, everything's going to you-know-where in a handbasket, and we're all going to be this, that, or the other, and it just goes on and on and on. Take the time to really look at what is in your life. And when you can appreciate the smaller things in life, and you can have maybe a few favorite books, and whenever you read them, it brings you to the center of who you really are. And that is what you need to remember. That is what you need to be able to say to yourself, maybe I'll give 5 seconds to this. Now, where do I really want to keep my mind? Do I want to invent something that's going to make this world a better place? Do I want to write a letter of gratitude? Do I want to really think about and ask myself questions of what's most meaningful to me, and really get down to the bare bones of what you need to get down to? And maybe you're just going to say, thank you very much, I'm going to pick up and call my best friend. Pick up the phone and call my best friend. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can make the shift. See, that's the one thing that you do have control over. That is absolutely amazing. It's an amazing power that you have. And you don't give that up to anybody. Believe me. And sometimes it takes an effort because you, if ever you're in a group, it's happened to me. You're in a group, and by the time all of these people express their opinions and everything is just so bad, and then all of a sudden a bit of sunshine comes in with a commentary saying, well, let me share something with you because I really think that there's another perspective. You can change the feeling in a room full of people in an instant because they're stopping that negative conversation. And that's the same thing we have to do with ourselves when we start going down that path that leads to nothing but anxiousness and unnecessary stress. And okay, let's see what we can do with what we've got available in our world and our life today. What is it you do have control over? Makes a great deal of difference. One of the stories that I came across, which I really, really liked, it was by a woman. She is in Texas. Her name was Edith. She said when her dad passed, and he was 92 years old, and she said he was in his final stages with Alzheimer, and he did not, it appeared, didn't really want to go. And she said, oh boy, this is really something. Well, what she did, I thought was very, very special. She wondered what she could do to make it easier for her dad. And she knew that his time was at hand. And so she told a story that her mother had told her. And he was listening. He stopped and he would listen. He wasn't distressed. And she said, during the past few years, as my dad was, you know, declining because of Alzheimer's, he would ask me why his parents and siblings who had already passed on weren't helping Mom with his care. And he would mention different names, including a sister of his, and it was her Aunt Arena. Now, Aunt Arena had died more than 19 years earlier. He had been the youngest of 9 siblings, and 6 of his siblings already had passed, so he had outlived quite a few members of the family. But she said, my dad, when he would talk like this, and he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she said it was like he knew they were waiting to greet him when it came time for him to go. So what she said to him, she said, you know, Dad, it's all right. You can go. Your parents, sisters, brothers, everybody is waiting for you. And don't worry about Mom. We'll take care of Mom. Well, he eventually did pass. It was very late in the evening. She said his body just could not take any more. And as stubborn as her dad was, she said, and as much as he really didn't want to go, the body just couldn't continue. Well, as with many families, when a member has passed, you get together. And Edith said she wondered as she was getting ready and talking about the preparations, etc. She said, I would wonder, he seemed so determined to hang on. Well, then she got busy. The funeral preparations took a lot of her time and her energy and her effort. And she said, there was that evening when my family and I went back home because we wanted to get some dinner. And we were sitting down and we were checking voicemails people had left on our home phone. And, of course, we had the caller ID that said the name of each caller in a robotic tone before the message played. And she said the first was a nephew by the name of Larry. The second message, interestingly, had no caller ID. A woman's voice came on, and I recognized the voice, Edith said. Only a name was spoken. Arena Fusky. That was all. Then the caller ID robotically announced the next message from another cousin in the family, Edna. everybody in the family heard the message from Aunt Irina. She had been dead for over 20 years. Well, Edith went and replayed it. She said there was no mistaking it. That was her voice on our voicemail machine. And it was very distinctive. She had a very unique voice. She said, I wasn't looking for a sign, but she said, to this day, there's no doubt in my mind that my dad had been reunited with everyone that he knew when he passed. I thought that story was so incredibly special. You know, there are people that do research that have found that they have been able, through technology, been able to pick up messages from people on the other side. And it's an interesting thing, but for her to have this happen and to not have any inclination whatsoever that this was even going to be something that would be gifted to her by someone from the other side. It's quite a powerful story. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I know that the 4th of July is absolutely one of the most powerful, enjoyable holidays that we have here in the United States. And there are people that will be traveling to Washington, D.C. to do special celebrations there. But no matter where you are, I do hope that if fireworks are permitted into your environment, there's more and more communities that are starting to use drones for the visual night displays. And here in my own community, they did it last year, and apparently it was just spectacular. They used something like 1,000 drones, and that is quite a bit of choreography and a lot of talented people working with those robotic pieces of equipment, but it was just magical here last year. So wherever you are, be sure you pay attention to what's going on, and if you have kids that are going to use fireworks, make sure that you have a bucket of sand, also a bucket of water that's handy, or a hose, you know, whatever is going to work best. But remember, safety first. That is so important. There's going to be huge crowds, a lot of enthusiasm. Kids are going to be very, very energetic. And the only reason I say it is because I know from previous 4th of July's that I've experienced that was something we have always had to pay attention to. And especially when you have little ones, because sometimes it is really a very, very exciting time, but it can be intimidating to some. And if you have pets, please be sure that your animal is able to deal with the environment, especially with heavy crowds, if you're going to have your dog with you, etc. Here, I don't think many people are going to have their animals with them because it's going to be too warm. And the fireworks for many animals are just devastating. One of my Scotties had a real tough time with it. So just remember, the holiday is a special one, and it is a joyful one. So just pay attention to those things that need to be paid attention to, and have a wonderful time. Wonderful memories come from these celebrations that you'll carry forth. And hey, you could put it into your gratitude journal, too. Donna Sebo here. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I say that every night at the end of the show because it really is true. And believe me, it's something that I have to remember constantly. Because when you are in an environment where you can be pummeled, literally, with all kinds of commentaries and information and subject matter that can make you feel so helpless. You think, well, there's no answers, or it's just so confusing. But all you have to do is that shift and find something that you really love to read or that you enjoy watching, and realize there's a lot of good people on this planet and they're doing a lot of good things. Remember, you're the boss of your own space. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now. It's a double header. Hope you'll join us.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.